Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Spurs Up Show, best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. Today is Thursday, May the 20th, 2021. Today's show, I break down this weekend series as Gamecocks baseball hosts the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers in the final SEC series of the 2021 baseball season. Guys, I'll break down the series in its entirety. First things first, we'll talk Tennessee. They're pitching, they're hitting. Of course, we'll talk South Carolina the weekend rotation, what to watch for, key player of the weekend. And I will lock in my predictions. Again, postseason hopes and dreams are on the line this weekend at Founders Park. Guys, also news and notes to get into, your listener questions. We have a fantastic conversation as well. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show joins me as we break down the Gamecocks 2021 football season. We also talk Shane Beamer, his coaching staff, Luke Doty, SEC football as a whole. Guys, a great conversation and a great show here on a Thursday, folks. So sit back, relax, enjoy. It's all brought to you by our friends over at Upstate Movers Group. Guys, Upstate Movers Group, superior moving service. They bring care and attention that companies can't offer because they're just too busy maintaining trucks and profiting off of them instead of focusing on service. Guys, service is what separates Upstate Movers Group from the competition. They're not a trucking company. They're a moving services company, and they're also employee-owned co-op. Their movers are paid twice the industry average, and everyone on the crew is invested in your success. They have dedicated professional crew members, and they also offer black glove service. They offer end-to-end packing services, custom crating and packaging for special items, and cleaning services as well. They're founded by Greenville natives and University of South Carolina alumni, guys, so a Gamecock-owned small business. They also offer 20 years of project management moving experience, and they can offer logistics and solutions that traditional moving companies simply do not have the skills for. Guys, whether in the upstate or across the state of South Carolina, if you have any moving needs in 2021, be sure to check out our friends over at Upstate Movers Group. You can find them on social media at Upstate Movers Group. Or of course, if you have any other questions, go to their website, upstatemoversgroup.com. That's upstatemoversgroup.com. Be sure to check them out and tell them Chris from the Spurs Up Show sent you. Let's get it. There was one, the last SEC series of the 2021 South Carolina baseball season is upon us. Folks, happy Thursday. Hope you're all doing well. I'm Chris Phillips, host of the Spurs Up Show, as always. Appreciate you guys tuning in, guys. We have got a packed show, a lot to get into. Happy game day to you all, by the way, as the Gamecocks take on the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers starting tonight at Founders Park. Guys, again, thank you all so much for tuning in. Before we get into everything, because we've got a great show, like I said, breaking down Carolina baseball, your listener questions, some other news and notes, of course, a great conversation as well, talking South Carolina football, because it's never too early to start breaking down and talking Gamecocks football. What offseason, right? As my good friend from 24/7 Sports, Josh Pate, says, there is no offseason. But again, guys, thank you all so much for tuning in. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying cool, by the way. You know, the hot weather is starting to find its way to Columbia, South Carolina, to the state of South Carolina as a whole. And I thought it was funny, Mark Kingston saying after the game Tuesday, encouraging the rowdy Roosters, the fans, if you will, to drink their water and to hydrate. And it's like, Coach, I hate to break it to you, but if there's one fact that I know about rowdy Roosters do not pregame with water. That is a fact. You can look it up in the textbook. That is a fact. And I know the Rowdy Roosters will be out and about this weekend at Founders Park. Again, guys, thank you all so much for tuning in. I really, truly appreciate you all. Thank you so much for the love and support. You guys have made the content this week and throughout this baseball season. It's crazy as we sit here. The final SEC series. Time flies when you're having fun, like I've said before. And man, it's hard to believe we're already on the last SEC series this 2021 season, but here we are. here we are. It's nuts, man. So again, thank you guys for joining me along this ride. Without further ado, let's go ahead and break down this series this weekend as the Gamecocks host the fourth ranked Tennessee Volunteers starting tonight at Founders Park for a best of three set. Tonight at 7 o'clock, Friday at 7 as well, and then Saturday a noon first pitch. The first two games on SEC Network, plus the Saturday game on the big channel on SEC Network. Tony Vitello, the head coach of the Tennessee baseball program, and what a job he's done, you know, because it's crazy. Even coming into this series, and I'll be honest with you, I have not watched a ton of Tennessee baseball this year, and there's a reason why, because I don't think of Tennessee baseball as, you know, some powerhouse or some great baseball program. My God, look at their baseball stadium, guys. And it's not even a slight. It's just the fact of the matter that look at their baseball stadium. Look at their commitment to baseball, quote unquote, if you will. Like, Tennessee is no baseball power. You know, Tennessee, when you think of traditional SEC powers in college baseball, Tennessee is not one that comes to mind. So what Tony Vitello has done and is currently doing with this Tennessee ball club, again, I sit there and I'm like, I really still can't believe that Tennessee is a top five ball club. Like, it's hard for me to comprehend that Tennessee might be an Omaha team this year, like legitimately of that caliber. But again, it just speaks and screams to what Tony Vitello has done in his short time in Oxford. Hey, the Vols this year, like I mentioned, what he's done is incredible. They're 40-13 overall, 18-9 on SEC play. And of course, Tennessee fighting for the overall SEC crown as they take on the Gamecocks. Guys, let's break down the Vols a little bit deeper. We'll talk pitching and hitting. First, we'll start on the mound. And this is really, you know, Tennessee elite in both categories, I would say. But on the mound, I would say, is really where they've made their money this year. A 3.51 overall ERA, 4.06 SEC ERA. They are second in the conference in ERA. So again, this is just going to be another ho-hum typical SEC weekend where you are facing the best of the best. Just face it. It is what it is. They also, here's a random stat for you. They have 11 pickoffs, which leads the SEC. So South Gunner Runners, I know we don't run a ton anyways, but South Gunner Runners, beware. 11 pickoffs, which leads the conference. Their starting rotation looks like this, guys. It's Thursday through Saturday. Tonight, they will roll with right-handed pitcher Chad Dallas, 8-1 with a 4.25 ERA. In Friday's game, they will pitch left-handed pitcher Will Heflin, 2-2 with a 4.2 ERA. And then Saturday's game, they will go back to the righty, right-handed pitcher Blade Tidwell, 6-3 with a 3.6 ERA. Again, I've been able to watch these guys a little bit. Dallas and Tidwell, sort of your typical power righties. Heflin, I got to watch a good bit of Heflin against Arkansas. Your typical lefty, he's not going to overpower you. Uses his changeup a lot. Pitches you backwards, uses his breaking ball. But again, all three for Tennessee, really, really talented. And you like the Vols bullpen as well as one of the best in the conference. Let's look at the dish, guys. They're hitting 281 overall, 275 in conference. So again, a Tennessee team that can absolutely swing it. Get a load of these numbers. Second in on-base percentage, second in hits, first in doubles, first in walks, and second in hit-by-pitches. And not only, guys, do they have power, not only do they have a lot of hitability, but they're patient too, and that's what makes them so tough at the plate. 71 home runs for this club as well, which is right behind South Gunner, who has 72. They have a 394 on base percentage. Like I told you guys, second in the league in that category. And they also run 64-81 in stolen bases this season. So again, they can do a little bit of everything offensively. Players to watch for Tennessee. First, you got to start with infielder Liam Spence. He leads their team an average 374 mark, two home runs, and 26 RBIs. Also, outfielder Jordan Beck hitting 277 on the year, 13 homers, and 55 RBIs. And then there's infielder Max Ferguson, a speedster, 263, nine homers, 37 RBIs, but also 14-18 on stolen bases this season. But again, guys, a lot of talent on this Tennessee squad. Like I said, guys, it's crazy what Tony Vitello has done flipping that Tennessee baseball program. Because, you know, in the past, Tennessee, people looked at the Tennessee series as the way they look at, with all due respect, Missouri or Kentucky, in the sense like, okay, that's one we definitely are going to win two out of three, probably should sweep. Tennessee is no longer like that. Again, their record speaks to it, 18-9 in SEC play. Tennessee is no longer like that. This is a legitimate Omaha contending ball club, and the Gamecocks are going to have their hands full this weekend. Let's move to the South Carolina side of things, guys. The rotation this weekend will be the same. Tonight, Brandon Jordan, the righty, will get the ball. All three of the Gamecocks pitchers, of course, righties. But right-handed pitcher Brandon Jordan will get the ball tomorrow night. Right-handed pitcher Brett Carey. And then Saturday, right-handed pitcher Thomas Farr will look for his second SEC win in Saturday's game. Guys, let's move into what to watch for. And there are a lot of storylines and things we can talk about on the field. But I think the number one thing, I know the number one thing from the fans' perspective that we're all looking forward to and looking forward to seeing is simply 100% capacity returning to Founders Park. The Rowdy Roosters have been let out of their cages. And I personally, guys, you know, win, lose, or indifferent, I will be at all three games this weekend. I will be there at Founders Park taking that all in and soaking it all in. Again, win or loss, whatever the result on the field may be, I can predict this as a certainty. It is going to be one hell of an environment and one hell of a time at Founders Park this week. And I really believe Gamecock fans, who I think are the most passionate in the entire country, the best fans in the entire country, people are itching to get the yard. You know, we've had people clamoring all season long. Hey, open it up, 100%. We've been watching from afar as Mississippi State and Ole Miss and all these other schools have been enjoying that. Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to make Founders Park the hostile environment we all know it can be. And again, there are many, many storylines on the field, matchups that I am on the edge of my seat waiting for and looking forward to. But I'm telling you, man, I just simply put, if nothing else, cannot wait to walk into those gates of Founders Park tonight to a packed out, sold out, rowdy, intense, emotional atmosphere that I think we're going to see at Founders Park this weekend. It's going to be incredible. The Rowdy Roosters will be out and about. Hopefully, here's hoping and praying, fingers crossed, that Ray Tanner and all parties involved, the Yellow Coats, let the Rowdy Roosters do their thing. Because we have seen already this season that when you do, good things will happen. We saw it against Florida. We got in their heads early in that series, early and often. The Rowdy Roosters were all in their heads. We saw it game two against Arkansas. When you let the Rowdy Roosters out of their cages, good things will happen. And I think that's going to happen this weekend. And again, I just cannot wait to see the first 100% capacity South Carolina sporting event since, what, I mean, I guess the last baseball game before COVID. So it's been over a year since we've had this. So can't wait, man. It's going to be awesome to see, awesome to watch, and awesome to be a part of this week in the Founders Park. Let's move on to the actual field of play, guys. And what I'm looking for, when you talk this Gamecocks pitching staff, I feel good about all three guys you throw this weekend, but I want to talk Brett Carey specifically. And this is a dude that's really hot right now. You know, I talked about this, I think, on the Monday show. We recapped the Kentucky series and kind of just talked about what Brett Carey has done to this point. And 15 innings pitched for him, his last 15 innings pitched, he's given up just one earned run and has 16 strikeouts. Brett Carey's hot right now, bottom line. My question is this, after throwing a complete game shutout with 10 strikeouts and less than 100 pitches last weekend in Lexington, what does Brett Carey do for an encore? Because here's the thing, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer or be someone that's, you know, I'm not trying to be negative, but I just want to say to fans, you know, I'm a little worried that fans are expecting that this kid is going to go out there and do what he did in Lexington every single time. Now, with that being said, I expect Brett Carey to do Brett Carey things. I expect Brett Carey to give you a very typical Brett Carey start tomorrow night in game two. I think he's going to fill up the zone. I think he's going to throw strikes. I think he's going to locate on both sides of the plate. I think he's going to mix speeds. I think it's going to be a typical Brett Carey performance. But there's just no way he tops what he did last weekend. I mean, there's just freaking no way. There's no way, right? Right? Am I crazy? I don't think so. So I'll be curious to see. And again, that game two slot, you know, you won last Friday, right? You were already up 1-0. That game two slot, especially in a series like this, and maybe I'm stating the obvious, but it is so important. Because one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to go into Friday night, tomorrow night, with a chance to clinch the series over the fourth-ranked Tennessee Volunteers, which, guys, I'm going to talk about in just a second, but I don't even have to tell you how important this weekend is and how important this series is. But either you're going to pitch in that situation, or, and hopefully this is not the scenario, but or you're going to have backs against the wall at home in front of a packed house, and Brett Carey is going to have to do his thing and throw his best baseball to make sure you have a chance to win that series going into Saturday. So what does Brett Carey do for an encore? I mean, just how good can he be this weekend for South Carolina? Is there any way he can even come close to duplicating what he did last weekend against the fourth-ranked team in the country and one of the best swinging teams in the entire conference? Going to be a lot of fun to watch. Something else I'm watching for, guys, simply put, and listen, I know South Carolina didn't swing it great in the Tuesday game against App State, but guys, you know what? It's the midweek. Like I said on yesterday's show, it's not about how you win. It's simply put that you win. Hey, Ole Miss lost to UT Martin. LSU lost to, like, Northwestern State. Does that mean they're terrible? Does that mean, you know, no. You cannot draw conclusions from a midweek game. It does not matter. Hey, you look terrible against Clemson, lost Clemson, then you go sweep Kentucky. The midweek is the midweek, and the midweek games are now over. My question is this. Can South Carolina stay hot at the plate? Because I would still say they're hot. And I'm more so talking about SEC play. And you go back to what they did in Lexington. Situational hitting. We talked about it all last week before that series. Productivity over power. And in a series like this, against a pitching staff like Tennessee features, which is, like I said earlier, a typical SEC staff with a ton of studs, a ton of big-time arms. Can the Gamecocks continue to do those things right? Can they stay hot at the plate in that way? I'm not talking about going out there hitting 10 home runs this weekend, although that would be a lot of fun to watch. That's not even what I'm talking about. I'm talking about guy in scoring position, less than two outs. Jumping on teams early. You know, getting things and getting early momentum rolling. And certainly, yes, the task will be much tougher this weekend than it was last weekend. There's no denying that. But can this Gamecocks lineup, can they capture whatever they had last week in Lexington and bring it to the table here this weekend? Because you're going to have to. Runs will be at a premium. You know, I can already hear it now. South Carolina fans are going to be bitching and moaning no matter what happens going into tomorrow's game and Saturday. Oh, we're not hitting enough. We're not doing that. Well, guess what, man? The competition's taking a step up. There's no question, right? There's no question. But as I told you guys after that series in Lexington, certainly Kentucky's not the level that Tennessee is, but give our guys credit too. They made the adjustment, and there was an emphasis, there was a focus on productive at-bats. Productive at-bats. Productivity over power. Do we continue to see that adjustment made? Do we continue to see that be the focus for this team? Because I think if you do that, if you simply put, if nothing else, keep that as the focus. Because, hey, you're coming back home. You love to hit at Founders Park. It's going to be a hot weekend. The baseball is going to be flying all over the place. No doubt. You're going to hit your fair share of home runs this weekend. I really believe that. But those will come naturally. You've got big, strong hitters that are going to run into home runs. In the meantime, continuing to carry over that approach and that mentality and that mindset that you had last weekend at Kentucky. Do we see this South Carolina lineup do that? Or, you know, you're coming back home, you know, it's a hitter-friendly park, you know you hit a lot of bombs there. Hey, do we see a South Carolina lineup go the other way and get back to their old ways of swinging out of their shoes every time, no matter the situation, and not caring if there's a guy on second or third less than two outs and not caring what the situation is? Do we see them go back to that? Where's the point of emphasis, and can the South Carolina Gamecocks lineup continue to swing it well situationally? Situationally, productive at bats. Can they do it? That's what I want to see at the plate. Guys, on that note, something else I'm watching for. And I've said this a couple of times this season, but it's just flat out true. And it's like I told you guys, this is why I don't do, you know, keys of the weekend for baseball, because the keys of the weekend for baseball are pretty much the same every single weekend. No doubt, right? They're pretty much the same every single weekend. But what I'm looking for this weekend, when you're facing a team like Tennessee, or you saw against Arkansas or Mississippi State or Ole Miss or Vandy or any of these elite ball clubs, when you are facing a team like Tennessee, what I'm looking for and what's going to matter most are the little things. Which team, simply put, executes the little things better? Who does the little things better this weekend? Because the little things become the big things. Things like getting a bunt down in a situation that calls for it. Throwing strikes. Hey, no out walks, leadoff walks, two out walks, hit by pitches, unforced errors, making errors in the field in general. It is those little, situational things. Going back to the plate, man on second, nobody out. Which of these two teams gets him over to third? And which of these two teams doesn't? It's going to come down to the little things. In a conference like this, in this conference, in the SEC, when you're fighting for what these two teams are fighting for, you're fighting for SEC East hierarchy and postseason dreams, and you got two really good ball clubs, the margin for error is razor thin. Hey, think back to Arkansas, guys. Think back to Arkansas if you can. What was the reason you could argue South kind of lost game one? It wasn't some, you know, huge home run, this, that. The Gamecocks couldn't get a bunt down in the sixth inning. Josiah Seitler pops up the bunt. You get the out. You had first and second, nobody out. You pop up the bunt. Next guy comes up, double play. That game is over at that point. You lost the game in that scenario. It comes down to things like that. So which one of these two teams, can the Gamecocks be that team that makes fewer mistakes? And when Tennessee makes a mistake, like I said, a leadoff walk, a two-out walk, an error, can they be the team that capitalizes on it? Because that's what it'll come down to. There's going to be five or six or maybe seven moments in this weekend throughout these three games that you're going to look back and say, hey, that's where it was won or lost. That's where it was won or lost. Bottom line. Guys, final thing I'm looking forward to and watching for to seeing this weekend is this. And like I told you guys, I don't have to tell you, there's a lot riding on this weekend for both sides, by the way. A lot riding for both sides. We're talking SEC tournament seeding. That gets going next week. We're talking the overall SEC title that Tennessee is fighting for. Hey, guys, I don't know if you knew this, but technically, and I say technically because so much dumb-ish would have to happen, technically, the Gamecocks could still win the SEC East, believe it or not. But the SEC title is on the line. Hosting hopes are on the line for South Gunna. You know, I think if you win one this weekend and win a few in Hoover, you combine that with your RPI and strength of schedule, I think you host. You take this series, you 110% host. So your future, your destiny is literally in your hands if you're South Carolina. And if you're Tennessee as well, by the way. I'm looking forward to a fantastic weekend of baseball. It's going to have that postseason feel. I mean, we're basically in the postseason right now. That's how it feels right now. This is the postseason. Again, you control your destiny. You control your future. You factor in all those things, all that on the line. And it goes back, like I said, to the little things. Do we see either side crack here? And I don't think Tennessee will. They just played the number one ranked Arkansas Razorbacks and took them to the wire, all three. This Tennessee team, they will be ready to go. And I think South Carolina will be as well. And it's going to be just one hell of a weekend for baseball. Two really high-quality ball clubs with a lot riding on the line. This is why you come to South Carolina. Weekends like this and to play in ball games like this, this is why you come to the University of South Carolina, man. You come to play in games like this. You come to play in series like this. You come for the pressure. You come for the pressure. You come to have hosting on the line. This is where you want to be. That's going to make for one hell of a weekend of baseball. And I can't wait to see how both of these ball clubs handle it. All right, guys, let's move to key player of the weekend. And I want to talk about a guy that I have not talked about a lot recently. Okay. Because we love to talk about this Gamecocks pitching staff and how great they've been this year. And they have. They have. I think you're ranked third in ERA right now, maybe third or fourth, but you've had a great year on the mound. And, you know, you can't say enough about the job that Sal Cunha's pitchers have done, especially of late. Hey, you threw a shutout on Saturday last week and you threw a shutout in the midweek. But there are a few guys on your roster that affect both pitching and at the plate, right? Most guys are either a pitcher or you're a position player and you're hitting, right? There's one guy on your team right now that has affected both all season long and that has done a fantastic job on both sides. And that man is catcher Colin Burgess. Burgess obviously getting the night off on Tuesday in the midweek. Pretty standard stuff, pretty typical stuff, which, by the way, Wes Clark, tip the cap to him. He did a fantastic job, I thought, catching in the midweek. But Colin Burgess, of course, will catch all 27 innings for you this weekend. And again, there are few. There's only one, actually, guys that impact the game both defensively and offensively. You know, when you talk this South on a pitching staff and just how good they've been this year, you've got to give a lot of credit to Colin Burgess and the way that he has handled these South kind of pitchers. Because I can tell you guys this, as a former pitcher myself, sometimes we can get in our own heads. Sometimes we can overthink situations. Sometimes we can get a little bit emotional. And your catcher, I mean, he's literally the quarterback of your team. He is the captain of your infield. And him and that pitcher, that relationship they have, it's very, very important. So what Colin Burgess said, hey, being a wall back there too. One of the best in the SEC at throwing out guys. You saw that last week in Lexington. They challenged him time and time again. And that's one of those little things that will be pivotal this weekend, limiting the running game. And then at the plate. At the plate. You know, I don't think Colin has been swinging it quite as well as he did in the beginning of the SEC play, but still a very nice piece for the Gamecocks lineup down there in the 7-hole. 6-hole, wherever he's at. I see Colin Burgess coming up in a big spot this week. I got a feeling. I think offensively at the plate, I think he's going to be one of your key guys. And defensively, like I said, the way that he impacts the game both at the plate and behind the dish, nobody else has that big of an impact on this Gamecocks baseball team right now. So for that reason, when I look at this series and you're talking about little things and doing little things right, my key player of the weekend, catcher Colin Burgess. A lot falls on him this weekend to get right. And if he does that, the Gamecocks will have one hell of a shot this weekend. All right, let's move, guys. Of course, since this series is different Thursday through Saturday instead of the traditional Friday through Sunday, I am also going to lock in my prediction for this weekend series. Like I said, man, it's crazy. The last one of the 2021 season. Kind of sad. It's wild how it's just flown by. You know, after not having baseball last year, not having an SEC season last year, ironically enough, you know, the season was called like on that Wednesday or something. The Gamecocks were supposed to open SEC play with Tennessee that Friday. They were supposed to open conference play that Friday. And, I said it on yesterday's show, how can you not have perspective, right? Just how lucky and how grateful we are that we even had a season, but now to have 100% capacity at Founders Park, the Rowdy Roosters back in full capacity at Founders Park. And the second that was announced, the question went to how much of an impact does that have on this weekend? And I don't think, you know, you ever say, I mean, look, Arkansas went into Tennessee and took 2 out of 3, right? You don't ever say that, oh, just because you have a sellout and just because you have 100%, oh, that you're definitely going to win the series, right? Your team's still got to go out there and do their thing. Your team's still got to go out there and play ball, right? You got to execute. You got to throw strikes. You got to play defense. You got to situationally hit. You got to take advantage of opportunities. You have to do those things you have to do on the baseball field, bottom line. And when you look at this series, like I told you guys after Kentucky, the question with this team is this. Was Kentucky just a one-off and you took advantage of a bad UK team? Or Is this a Gamecocks baseball team that's getting hot at the right time? You know, we saw this team. And baseball is all about runs, right? It's all about spurts, all about runs, just like any other sport. But the difference in baseball and other sports, the runs are measured in minutes. In baseball, they're measured in games. They're measured in innings, right? They're measured in pitches. And you saw this team early on come out of the gates, flying out, hell of a start, right? Undefeated. Then you went through a lull. Then you got hot again. Then you went through a lull. Could the Kentucky series last weekend serve as the start of a new hot streak? And, you know, playing in the best conference in the country, it's been a lot of fun, first off. But it's been very interesting because you've had a lot of opportunities like this one to win big series and to beat top-ranked opponents. I mean, you've hosted Arkansas. You've hosted Mississippi State. You've hosted Florida. You've played some big series at Founders Park thus far this year. And Tennessee is just the latest. You know, you've gone on the road and played big series. Ole Miss, Vanderbilt. I mean, every single weekend in this conference, there's a reason your strength of schedule and RPI is so high. But when I look at this series this weekend, game one starting tonight. Again, game one tonight at 7, game two at 7, game three at noon, all at Founders Park this week. Going to be a beautiful weekend for baseball in the capital city. This is a really, really good Tennessee lineup, first off. Again, hitting 275 in conference play. With that being said, let's go ahead and ixnay that, nip that in the bud. Your pitching staff is going to give you a chance to win. Bottom line. And I know it's stating the obvious, but I tell you, man, if you can get that game tonight, you feel really good about your chances, man. Tomorrow night, Brett Carey. Saturday, Thomas Farr. Thomas Farr is not your typical game three starter, guys. I don't have to tell you that. Tonight's game is so important. But your pitching staff, I mean, it's all hands on deck. Everybody's ready to go. What your starters give you, Will Sanders, Julian Bosnick, Andy Peters, Danny Lloyd, John Gilreath, Parker Coyne, Wesley Sweat, CJ Wines, if he can go this weekend, Jared Bennett. You feel really good about what you've got overall as a pitching staff, and I think they will do enough to keep you in all three ball games. It all comes down to even beyond the situational hitting, productivity over power, but it comes down to the little things. And I really think this is a coin flip type of series. I really do. I think it's a coin flip type of series. I do not think last weekend against Kentucky was, Kentucky was just terrible. You know what? Here's the thing. South Carolina made them look terrible. They took advantage. They shut them down. And I know there were some bullpen struggles last week, whatever, but, you know, relievers coming in games where it's a blowout. I have no worries about Andy Peters, Julian Bosnick, what those guys will give you, what your bullpen's going to give you. Have no concern at all. Those guys will be sharp this weekend. I guarantee you that. But when you look at this series, like I said, guys, you can't just pick a team just because, they got 100% capacity now. The crowd's going to be the difference. But, you know, man, in life and most certainly sport, there are moments where the stars align and the script just comes together. And you feel like, man, it just feels like it's almost meant to be. And when you factor that in, with the Gamecocks ball club that, again, I really do believe last weekend against Kentucky wasn't just, Kentucky's just terrible. Well, we made them look that way. We kicked their ass, and we played really, really good baseball in doing so. And if you swing it that way, situationally, two-out hitting, you can beat anybody in the country. I truly believe that with the arms you have. But there come times in sports where the stars aligned, the script makes sense, and this is also a Gamecocks ball club, guys, that is due to win one of these. Are we not so due to take two out of three in a series like this? We've been tipping our cap all season long. It's about time somebody tipped their freaking cap to us. It's about time somebody tipped their freaking cap to us. So when you factor that in, the arms you have, I think your hitters will show. I think productivity will be a focus yet again. And then again, the intangibles, the things that are off the field, the 100% capacity, what's on the line, you know, hosting, literally, you control your destiny. You control your future. I'm expecting an all-time classic this week, and I think it'll be three fantastic games. But at the end of the day, like I said, you've tipped your cap all season long. You're due that somebody else tips their cap to you. And for that reason, I'm picking the Gamecocks. I've got South Carolina taking 2 out of 3 over the Tennessee Volunteers. Like I said, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a knockout, drag-down fight. Please, guys, don't come into this series saying, oh, Tennessee's this, they're that. They're not that good. They're not a baseball power. While that may be true, they've got a damn good ball club this year. They are not ranked in the top five on accident. They are not a 40-win team already, by the way, the first one in college baseball. They are not at that point on accident. But with that being said, sometimes I think it's just meant to be, and this just feels like a weekend with all the intangibles, everything on the line, and I think you're starting to play your best baseball yet again. It feels like the stars are aligned at Founders Park, and I think the stars will be aligned at Founders Park this weekend. Lock it in, folks. South Carolina takes 2 out of 3 over the Tennessee Volunteers to finish 17-13 in SEC play, and most importantly, lock up a hosting bid for the postseason. There it is, folks. 2 out of 3. We just freshened up the mullet. The Omaha cut is here. It's official. Hey, this is the regional hosting cut. Call it whatever you want to call it. Call it taking 2 out of 3 over Tennessee cut for all I care. But book it. Lock it in. Gamecocks take 2 out of 3 over the Tennessee Volunteers. Again, game one getting underway tonight, 7 o'clock, tomorrow at 7, and then Saturday at noon, Thursday and Friday games on SEC Network Plus, the Saturday game on SEC Network. And folks, I am freaking fired up for it. And I'll be there at all three. And if you're going to be there, holler, say what's up. I'll see you all at Founders Park, you beautiful bunch of rowdy roosters. Cannot freaking wait to hear the rowdy roosters crowing all weekend long in Columbia. All right, that's the Tennessee preview, breakdown, prediction, everything, guys. Like I said, tomorrow's show, we will not be talking game one of Tennessee. Tomorrow, calling an audible, we will be talking Gamecocks football. Because simply put, I don't want to wait until after game one tonight to record a show. It'd be like, that would be super late, and I don't want to do that. So we will talk about and break down game one, of course, in post-game, but also on the Daily Crow on Friday. And tomorrow's show will be football-focused, which I think will be a nice, you know, nice way to go into the weekend. And, of course, it's never too early to talk South Carolina football. All right, let's move into news and notes, guys. A couple of things really quickly. The Gamecocks, projected as the number 2 seed in the Gastonia Regional per Baseball America. So another postseason projections, this time coming from Baseball America. They have the Gamecocks, the 2 seed, of course, Charlotte as the host, Liberty as the 3 seed, and VCU, Virginia Commonwealth, as the 4 seed. So how many of y'all would be down to take a trip to Gastonia? I know a lot of y'all probably live up around that area. It would be very, very interesting. Also, guys, a quick update, something that just dropped right before we came on, and huge news for us all. The NCAA announcing local and state guidelines will guide capacity limits in the baseball and softball postseasons. 100% will be allowed. Also, masks and distancing will not be required at the ballparks. That coming from Kendall Rogers at D1Baseball.com. Long story short, guys, if the Gamecocks, let's just say win. Let's just go ahead and assume it. We're getting the freaking series win this weekend. Hey, that means 100% at postseason baseball. The regionals are back. Founders Park in the postseason is back. Let's freaking go. Let's go. You love to see that for college baseball. You love to see that for the game overall. And you love to see that for a bunch of rowdy roosters that are going to make life a living hell this postseason for the opponent. All right, guys, let's move into your listener questions, and then we'll dive into our interview. We only have one listener question, just one lonely listener question. And hey, get this. Here's the question. JK Gill 34 says, how bad is it going to suck going from 100% fans back to 50% fans if we host a regional? Well, JK Gill 34, guess what? You ain't got to worry about that no more. I guess you were the perfect jinx, so I appreciate you asking that question. 100% capacity this postseason. You love to see it. All right, guys. Hey, it's been a lot of fun. like I said, if you're going to be out there, I appreciate you guys loving sport. I love interacting with all the fans, talking Gamecocks, shooting the shit during the games, whatever. If you're there, holler. Say what's up. Let me know. Yours truly will be out at Founders Park for all three games this weekend, watching the Gamecocks take on the Tennessee Volunteers. If you're going to be there, let me know. Going to be one hell of a weekend. Obviously, podcast, Daily Crow, all the content will continue to roll throughout the weekend, and you guys already know the drill for sure. But again, guys, thank you all so much for tuning in. Now, we got a great conversation, by the way. Great interview. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show, if you've never heard of him, which I'm sure some of you are unfamiliar. He actually had Shane Beamer on his podcast. So this dude talks SEC football, breaks it all down. We had a great conversation about South Carolina, the 2021 season. Of course, Shane Beamer, his outlook for Coach Beamer, the coaching staff, Luke Doty, the defense, a lot of really, really cool stuff. Like I said, guys, it is never too early to start breaking down Gamecocks football. Offseason, what offseason? Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show, phenomenal stuff. So again, guys, enjoy the weekend. Go Cox, beat Tennessee, and enjoy this conversation with Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show. All right, joining us on the Spurs Up Show, guys, very excited. It's never too early to start talking SEC football and, of course, Gamecocks football. That's what we're doing here today. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show, he's an SEC diehard, former Rivals.com employee, but, again, does great work on the J-Boy Show talking SEC football, also Gamecocks football. He even had Gamecocks head coach Shane Beamer on his airwaves just a little bit ago, guys. The guests for him are fire. You can find him on social media. He's all over there as well, guys. Very pleased to be joined. Very excited to chat with, again, Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show. Jake, appreciate you taking the time, man. It's a pleasure to have you on, my friend. Like I said, it's never too early to start talking football. I know we're middle of May. We're right in the thick of baseball season, the postseason getting here. And even as big a baseball guy as I am, man, I'm chomping at the bit to start talking football, start previewing everything, breaking these games down, giving predictions. And before you know it, kickoff's going to be here. But yeah, again, thanks for taking the time, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, Chris. Well, you know, before we get into it, man, it's a pleasure to be on. Love what you got going. You know, like we were talking about on the pre-show a little bit, I think of South Carolina football. I think of this up show, you know, and really seeing what you've built over there, man. It's fantastic. I know the audience enjoys it. Yeah. You know, football in SEC is 365 and it never ends. You throw in recruiting, spring practice, summer, fall camp and all that stuff. And it's never too early. But no, man, I'm pumped to be here. And yeah, you know, Coach Beamer, it was awesome. You can find that on our YouTube channel. It's the J-Boy Show. We're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Really excited about him being in Columbia. I think he gets it. And I know we'll get more into that kind of as we get into it.
For sure. Jake, before we get into all that and, of course, talk Gamecocks SEC, since we're on the topic, I'd love to hear more about your show and kind of plug that, let people know where they can find it. And also, you know, I know you're from the heart of SEC country, literally from the state of Alabama, Opelika, Alabama, by the way, which I know that because former Gamecocks quarterback Jake Bentley hails from Opelika, Alabama. But just kind of talk about how you got started, the show as a whole. Like I said, I know you just plugged where you can find it and everything, but I know your show is kind of one of those up and coming. There's a lot of different platforms that talk SEC football, because we all love to talk SEC football, the biggest and baddest conference. But I'd love to hear more just kind of about, you know, your platform and kind of how you got going and, you know, what you got going now currently.
Yeah, no, man, I appreciate it. Well, you know, I worked at Rivals, like you said, for a small amount of time. I actually coached college football for 9 years, five at the Division I level. Was at South Alabama in the Sun Belt. Up in the beautiful state of Montana, did some junior college stuff, but no, man, had a great experience. Grew up in a sports family. My father, he was an All-American linebacker at Auburn, played in the NFL and coached in the SEC. So, you know, that's kind of what we did, and was up in Montana and came back for Christmas break. One of the few kind of breaks you get when you're in that profession. And, you know, I was a broadcast journalism major in college, and, you know, I watch ESPN, I watch some of these other outlets, and no offense to them, I get guys on from ESPN all the time, and they're great. But, you know, knowing the game, and it's not just football, basketball, baseball, I actually played baseball, and we cover all of it. But, you know, I'd watch, and not that some of those guys do a bad job, but you either had, it was all political, and it was getting agendas jammed down your throat every time you turned on ESPN. And there's other channels for that. You know, there's other outlets for that. And what I thought to myself was, number one, having the knowledge I do from coaching it, having the experience of being able to try and take complex problems in the game and put them in layman's terms for all the diehards out there without any political messaging and really talking, you know, schematics and getting into it. You know, anybody can sit here and say, oh, well, you know, South Carolina needs to run the ball better. Well, that's fine. My goldfish can tell you they need to run the ball better, but how can they run the ball better? How do they have to adjust their scheme? How do they have to adjust their personnel? Is it too much gap scheme? Is it too much zone? Are they not attacking the right points of the defense? And people want that, that unfettered, unpolitical information where, you know, if I turn on this on, I'm going to get sports and I don't have to worry about any of the other stuff. And man, we've been very fortunate. You know, the timing, it's been crazy. We're almost at 1.5 million downloads and growing every month, and just added the video portion on YouTube. And, you know, we get guests range anywhere from Shane Beamer to, you know, getting Matthew McConaughey, Rick and Bubba from the Rick and Bubba Show, and just, you know, kind of everywhere, man. And we do some stuff outside of the SEC as well. But, man, it's been a blast. I'm loving it. We're continuing to grow. We got some big moves we're about to make to continue trying to help everybody win the water cooler. That's our slogan, because I want our audience to be able to go to work, go to your friend's house, barbecue, tailgate, and win every argument about your team that you can, because that's what really counts, Chris, and we all know that.
Yeah, and you started, I believe, right during the quarantine, right? Like during the
peak
of April 2020, I think I saw it was like
everything. When I came back, it's the craziest story. I'm gonna write a book about it one day, man. But you know, timing is everything in life. And I came back from Christmas break, and this was in 19. And so, you know, I'm getting ready to go back. There's whispers of COVID, and it's some of the smaller schools, they're a little more precautious than the bigger schools that have all these resources. So literally I'm getting ready to go back. We've been pushed about a week. I'm sitting in the parking deck with my brother at the Memphis airport, about to get on the plane to fly back, to Bozeman. And I just looked at him, and I'd put out a few episodes just kind of messing around, because our recruiting was pretty much wrapped up with the early signing period, and got some good feedback. And, you know, I didn't know what was good to me, you know, like Joe Rogan's good. So like 800,000 views or whatever. And and so I don't know. And just decided, man, call it divine intervention, call it luck, whatever you want to call it. I just looked at my brother and was like, man, I want to see if I can take this somewhere. And it just ended up being one of the best decisions I ever made. I'm not gonna lie, I miss coaching, you know, just when it's in your blood, that competitiveness, but really being around the guys, forming those relationships, you know, seeing a guy that you recruited out of high school, watching him go to college and grow as a man and graduate and get that degree and have success on the field. But man, I'm loving what I'm doing right now. I've got a great team around me, and our audience is awesome, man. They're very interactive, even when they disagree. Even the haters, you got to love the haters as well. So now, man, it's been wild, but it's been fun.
That's when they're most interactive, when they disagree.
100%.
Yeah, Jake, I want to go back. Speaking of coaching, let's dive on the field. Let's talk Gamecocks. Let's talk SEC. Because when you started your show, there was a different man gracing the sidelines in Columbia. And I want to get your take on this because, again, you're right in the heart of SEC country. You've obviously followed SEC football your entire life. Last year was an unprecedented year, unlike anything we'd ever seen. And I thought the interesting narrative all year last year, going in all preseason, going into the season, we're all wondering what the landscape of the season was going to look like. But I feel like we all felt optimistic. We're going to have a season some way, somehow it's going to happen. But I bring this up because this affected South Carolina directly. But the narrative last year was, oh, this season's going to be a mulligan. You know, no coaches are going to get fired. You know, hey, you know, I remember sitting there June, July, people saying, well, you know, if you go 2-8, what you know, it doesn't matter. It's a mulligan type season. And I knew when that conversation was happening, I was like, you know, it's really easy to sit here in June and July, even August, and say, ah, go 2-8, mulligan, whatever, we'll bring him back next year. Not only was Will Muschamp fired, I mean, we saw what, 3 or 4 different coaching changes. Yeah. Derek Mason was the one I was really surprised about. Auburn's got a new head football coach. You know, you just go down the list. Just talk about that. Were you, did you bite that hook of that narrative that you thought everybody was safe? And were you surprised at just the amount of changes? I mean, these schools, you're thinking to yourself, okay, COVID, the economic ramifications, the money, the financial hit they're taking. These schools had no problem, or at least the boosters had no problem spending the money to get these coaches out of here. Did that surprise you at all? And then specifically on the South Carolina side of things, were you surprised to see the Gamecocks make the change and get rid of Will Muschamp?
Well, you know, it's a great question. And you know, before talking about, you know, saying we're going to have a season, I do got to give a shout out to Greg Sankey. I thought the way he handled himself with the onslaught of pressure and momentum and kind of political forces going against him to stay patient and do the right thing. He ended up showing the best leadership, and I do want to give a shout out to him. But I didn't, you know, I was kind of in the minority. I go on the radio a bunch, and that was a hot topic, you know, really going on, you remember, about a month. All the way through all the airwaves, radio, and whatever. And it just was hard for me to see with as much money, even with the pandemic year, even without the full capacity and got people buying stuff from the concession stand and getting jerseys and stuff like that. There's still so much pressure. And I actually thought, you know, almost on the contrary, it could almost be like a reset where as an athletic administration, if you had a coach that was kind of in limbo or hanging on the balance or had to have a good year, knowing that this could be a bad year almost gives you more ability to let the guy go, or almost more momentum to thinking that. And I wonder how much behind closed doors that actually got talked about. But I didn't bite into it because we know how passionate, because boosters are fans. Right. That's what people have to remember. Boosters aren't like the Supreme Court where, you know, they have to be unbiased and follow the letter of the law and that stuff.
They're
down
just
and whatever,
fans
whatever.
With money.
They are fans with money and influence. Right. That's what they are. Yeah. And fans.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. For better or for worse. So I didn't buy into that. And again, you know, what's crazy, and I'll kind of flip it on its head a little bit, Chris, with all the turnover we had last year, this is the first year. And I guess maybe you could say Ed Orgeron, if he has another bad year, but I think that's a stretch. There's really no head coach on the hot seat in the SEC this year, which is something I really haven't ever seen before. So it's so interesting how you can go from pre-pandemic, nobody's going to get fired because it's going to be a mulligan. Yeah, they're getting axed left and right to now going into this year. Nobody's probably getting fired after this year unless there's just an unmitigated disaster, NCAA, you know, sanctions, or right. We find out something crazy. So, it's just funny how it works, but I didn't bite into that narrative.
With Will Muschamp, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that situation. Yeah. You know, what did you feel like he had to do going into the 2020 season? And I guess, again, were you surprised that South kind of pulled the trigger? Especially, I mean, it basically happened mid-season after the sixth game or so, sixth or seventh game. But after that stretch where you gave up 159 points over a three-game stretch, it was just obvious, I think. And like you said, the boosters and the influence, they had seen enough in year five. Yeah. Were you surprised the Gamecocks made that move?
You know, I wasn't shocked. I do got to say this, kind of a little side note. Will Muschamp was actually my dad's GA when he coached at Auburn. So I've known Will for a long time. When he was at Auburn, we used to go eat at Buffalo Wild Wings with him all the time. And that was an interesting conversation. But, you know, I wasn't shocked. And just, you know, because you look at trajectory. And when you're South Carolina and you're sharing a state with Clemson and as much success as they're having and being the state school, Will Muschamp just hadn't done enough. And I almost used the comparison to Gus Malzahn a little bit, Chris, because, you know, Gus Malzahn got fired at Auburn because the offense wasn't performing. That's why. And he's an offensive guru, an offensive guy. So it's you're having to bring in offensive coordinators to try and fix your offense when you're this offensive guru. That's a bad look and starts pushing you out of the door. And you look at Will Muschamp defensively. You're supposed to be this defensive guru and big time recruiter and you, with the talent. Not like they didn't have talent on defense last year at South Carolina. Look at the NFL draft. Look at some of the guys they got in the junior class from last year. But they weren't getting it done on defense. And how can you sit there and go into a room saying, I'm the guy that's going to lead us to the promised land, when you can't even get the side of the ball that you're supposed to be an expert on to perform? So I think if the defense was playing lights out and the offense struggled because Colin Hill was limited and you lost Marshawn Lloyd before the season and you didn't have a ton of dynamic receivers outside of Shai Smith, maybe he hangs on. But when the defense started to go, I don't think there was any way they could keep him or really justify it, especially when you look at the talent and personnel they had on that side of the ball.
Yeah, for sure. And that, again, that 2020 season, abysmal. The Gamecocks go 2-8, but they pull the trigger on Will Muschamp. And then, of course, at that point, they were really the first ones to get out in front of it. And from that point, of course, the rumors start swirling. The coaching search is on. We hear the suspects, the usual suspects, the Hugh Freezes, the Billy Napiers, the Jamie Chadwell. The Jamie Chadwells. We started hearing those guys' names. Shane Beamer down the list. Before we get into Coach Beamer, I'll ask you, when that move was made and the Gamecocks were officially shopping for the next head football coach, was there a guy or a short list of guys that you expected them to go after and get? And where did Shane Beamer fall on that list for you?
You know, Shane's name's been thrown around a lot, and for good reason. And there's a theory I kind of have on that that we'll get into. But the names, I thought Jamie Chadwell was going to get it. I really thought Chadwell was going to get it with the year Coastal had, being in that state, all the momentum. I thought he had a good chance to get it. Was kind of surprised there. Here's the thing with Hugh Freeze. Eventually, Hugh Freeze is going to get a job in the SEC. Heck, I think if they fire Harbaugh, he may get the Michigan job. Remember, bookmark that. Remember, I said that. But the problem with Hugh Freeze is not that you can't hire him to be a head coach in the SEC. You can. But what they said at the SEC office is, if you hire Hugh Freeze back in the SEC, you will be audited every year, every single year.
Yep.
And I'm not saying cheating or do any of that stuff, whatever, whatever. But stuff happens even outside of the head coach's control. That one thing happens if Hugh Freeze goes to South Carolina bad. One guy, there's one violation. It's going to get blown up times 1,000. You're going to get 10 times the hit. So when you're weighing that decision, Hugh Freeze is an unbelievable football coach. Unbelievable offensive mind. Wins everywhere he goes. Hell, Chris, he beat Alabama at Ole Miss twice. He beat him with, but it's probably why they got on probation. He beat him with Bo Wallace. So, you know, you're going to hear that name thrown around eventually. I think you'll see him, especially as time goes on, maybe even going outside the conference and coming back. Billy Napier is a guy, you know, there's heavy talk with him in Auburn as well. When they made that move, I think Billy's going to be a tremendous coach as a young guy. But, you know, Shane to me is in the top tier. And I say that, Chris, because when you become a head coach for the first time, there's kind of two different elements. Okay. Sometimes you hire guys that are coordinators that have never been head coaches. That's obviously a big risk, because if you've never been a head coach, you don't know what it's like sitting in that chair. You can't be as hands-on as you would if you were the OC, where you just get to control the offense and you can call the plays. Now, there's head coaches that call the plays and do all that, but you have to be able to give up some power and relinquish some power, especially to a defensive coordinator if you're an offensive guy, or an offensive coordinator if you're a defensive guy. When you do that, and when you're not used to that and the structure and having to do all the media stuff outside of it, not being able to be in the meeting room all the time typically, and there's some circumstances where that doesn't happen, but it's tough, and it's the risk. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes it doesn't. Most times, in my opinion, it doesn't. Then you have guys that have been head coaches at smaller places and move up that understand what that head coach role is. Those guys tend to have more success early than the other guys do, but it doesn't always work out. Then there's kind of this very short list of guys that are kind of a mix of both. Because if you look at Shane Beamer, number one, he's Frank Beamer's son. He knows what it's like to be a head coach because he saw it with his own eyes. He understands how his father operated. He's been to multiple places with a bunch of responsibility, from recruiting coordinator. You can go down the list of special teams, everything. So he's seen the different elements of it. And he's really been a head coach. If you look at him at Oklahoma, he was getting primed to be a head coach, not at Oklahoma. He didn't go to Oklahoma to be a great assistant. He went to Oklahoma to just add another notch to that resume, to be able to say, listen, I've been under Lincoln Riley. I can go down this list of places I've been, and here's why. But when you think of Shane Beamer, to me, you think about South Carolina being good. You think about South Carolina recruiting well, especially in-state. Think about guys like Alshon Jeffrey, Jadeveon Clowney. You go down the list. Back when South Carolina, with Spurrier, was winning 9 games, 10 games. Heck, they played Auburn in the SEC championship. They're competing for the East. And I think people kind of hold on to that. And that means Shane knows how to do it. And that's the biggest thing. It's not going to be a quick fix. I know we'll get into that. But I think Shane Beamer was the best hire that South Carolina would have made. I would say him or Jamie Chadwell. And I think they're going to be pretty happy when you look back. Now, they got to be patient. And I know that's tough for any SEC fan base. But I think he's a guy that once he gets that roster right and develops some depth, they're going to have a chance to compete. Now, are they going to win 10 games every year at South Carolina? No, especially with what Georgia has and Florida has. But South Carolina should be competitive, Shane Beamer has the recipe to do that.
Yeah, and Jake, and on that note, you know, speaking from my perspective, Gamecock fans were very happy, I think, with the hire, because the thing was, you know, as we're going through the coaching search, I was fortunate to talk to a lot of former players, guys that played for Shane Beamer that knew him really well, and you kept hearing the word culture being thrown around, culture, over and over and over again. People got sick of hearing it. But the reason was because South Carolina is a unique place. You need a unique guy. I, for one, am really glad South Carolina did not make the cookie cutter hire of a Hugh Freeze or a Billy Napier, or just that typical good old boy in the SEC that we've seen time and time again. Oh, you were an assistant or Nick Saban? Cool, you're our next head coach. That's kind of what the SEC, the trap they fell into. And I'm glad South Carolina stepped out of that and kind of hired one of their own, if you will. You know, talking about his previous experience under Steve Spurrier, like you said, he's seen Sal Khan at his best. He went to Atlanta with Steve Spurrier in 2010. On the point you just made, though, Jake, I'm really curious to get your take on this, because I don't think Gamecock fans have unrealistic expectations for their football program. I'm sure some do. I mean, they have those in every fan base. Some people believe we should be winning national titles every year. And it's like, realistically, you and I both know, every year coming into a college football season, there are five, maybe six teams that can realistically win the national championship. And that's just the facts, and that's okay, but that's just reality. It's Alabama's world. We're all living in it, unfortunately. But I want to ask you about the South kind of program, and even, you know, yes, including Shane Beamer, but outside of that, when you look at the Gamecocks football program, what do you think are realistic expectations for it? And I'll give you my answer first, because personally, I think South Carolina realistically could build into an 8 to 9 win a year program. And maybe every 3 or 4 years, you have the right quarterback, you have a veteran team, you schedule right, you know, whatever, everything works out for you, and you realistically can compete for the East and maybe even compete to win an SEC championship. I think those are realistic expectations, and a guy like Shane Beamer could get you there. When you look at the Gamecocks football program, again, it's a program that has porous tradition. We all know that the tradition's not there. What Steve Spurrier did is unprecedented at South Carolina, and I think we'll probably never see it again. If you want me to be totally honest with you, five straight wins over Clemson, 3 straight 11-win seasons. The fourth season, you went to the SEC championship. I doubt you ever see a run like that again, and I agree with you, fans have got to be patient. But again, when you look at this program and what Shane Beamer is trying to obviously get it back to, what type of program do you think South Carolina can be realistically under his leadership?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think that's a lot. That's a big group of teams in the SEC, because we do have to remember we're talking about the SEC. And on one hand, it's really tough to have success. It's even tougher to have sustained success. That's why what Nick Saban's doing in Alabama, even though it's Alabama, is unprecedented. Yeah, it's incredible, and it'll never be done again. But when I look at South Carolina, you know, on the other hand, it's almost perfect, because if you do well in the SEC, that takes care of the national championship picture. You win the East and you win the SEC championship game, you're going to the playoff. Yeah. You win the East, you got a great chance of going to the playoff. So you can have both of them at the same time. This isn't where you're a team that, you know, you finish second in the ACC or you know, second in the Big 12 or something like that. You know, you've got no shot. You have a chance to do it a couple different ways, especially now with a 14 playoff, and I think it's going to expand. But when I look at South Carolina, I think you're exactly right. I think South Carolina fans should expect 8 to 9 wins a year, 9 being on the high end. But every 3 to 4 years, when you have veterans on that roster, and more importantly, not just the quarterback, when your offense and defensive line have depth and are able to compete with the elite teams in the league on the offensive and defensive line, that's when you're going to make their move. And I think Coach Beamer understands that. And South Carolina, with where they're at, with as beautiful as the place of Columbia, coached against them when I was at South Alabama, actually met Coach Spurrier in the 50-yard line. I'll tell you a funny little story. And I saw Coach Spurrier yesterday at a golf tournament, the Coach's Classic here in Atlanta, over at Peachtree. But walked up to him in the midfield. I always go up. I was a special teams guy. I introduced myself to the head coach. And he's sitting there at midfield with his sunglasses before the game. And I walk up to him like, "Coach Spurrier, just want to introduce myself. I'm Jake Crane, coach of special teams here at South." And I'm like, "You know, I hope you guys take it easy on us today." And he looked at me kind of the way he looks at it. And he's like, "Well, Coach, I'll tell you this much. I don't know what tape you've been watching. I just hope y'all don't hand us our own ass on our own field today." And it's just, you know, just such a cool guy. And to have Steve Spurrier is just such a cool guy. He's one of my all-time favorites. But expecting a run like that's really tough with what he did. But I do think Shane can get you guys back into the, "Hey, listen, when you go to South Carolina and play these guys, it's a problem." Kind of like what you're seeing at Ole Miss now a little bit. Not comparing South Carolina to Ole Miss, but it's not going to be a cakewalk anymore. And because you can win at South Carolina. You really can. Yeah. Now, can you sit here and have dominant success over a long period of time? I don't think so. I really don't. There's only a couple places, like you mentioned, that can. But there's no reason why South Carolina shouldn't finish in the top 20 in recruiting every year. There's no reason why South Carolina shouldn't be dominant at home. There's no reason why South Carolina, when they're able to play Georgia at home and get Florida at home, be able to win some of those games to compete for that East championship, to get an SEC championship. And I'm with you. I think 8 to 9 wins a year and every 3 to 4 years have a chance to make a run and really get into the picture. And I think South Carolina fans would be happy with that. A ton of fan bases would be happy with that.
a ton of fan bases should be happy with that.
That's exactly right.
I think there's a lot of pressure too with South Carolina because you see what your friends up the road are doing and year in, year out. It's a completely different scenario, different situation, but you know, it is what it is, right? And like you said, Auburn feels the same exact thing. I feel worse for Auburn, honestly, because being in the same exact division, that's tough.
Well, it's funny, you know, and this one I always laugh at. People be like, oh, you know, you have a show that covers SEC and you're an Auburn fan. We're all fans of somebody. You know, I don't let it. Right. It's like everybody on ESPN, it's like nobody's I guess nobody's a fan of anybody or anybody was ever a fan of anybody. It's just funny to me how that works out. But no, it's the truth. But I'll say this about Shane. He isn't scared. He's not scared at all. He's not scared of Clemson. He's not scared of Dabo. He's not scared to recruit against him. He's not scared to play up there. And if I'm a South Carolina fan, I like that. Shane's got some dog in him now. And it may not come off a ton when he's interviewing and stuff like that. There's a reason these players in this day and age really kind of vibe with this guy because he's not afraid. And when you're having to take on a Dabo Swinney and the behemoth that Clemson has built over there, you need a fighter. And Shane Beamer is going to fight them tooth and nail for everything. And don't let him start winning a couple. Don't let him win a game early. If he beats Clemson in the first 2 to 3 years, I don't care if it's at home or away, watch out because all this guy needs is a little bit because he's got the recipe. That's the difference. And he can recruit because that's what this all comes back to. Clemson didn't become great because they figured out fusion or had a back engineer UFOs that crashed in New Mexico. They got great because they pumped money in facilities. They made a decision that we're going to dominate recruiting. We feel like there's a slot in ACC where we can become the dominant team. And they did it. And in order to change that narrative, you need a guy that's going to walk up to the front door, ring the doorbell, and when Clemson opens the door, he's going to knock them out before they get a word out. And Shane's that type of guy to me. Now, it's going to take time. Is it a guarantee? No. But you got a whole heck of a lot better chance with a guy of the mentality of Shane Beamer than somebody that's just going there and trying to compete and hoping. Because hoping doesn't win games. Recruiting, discipline, culture, the weight room, accountability, consistency, that's what wins games. And that's what he understands.
Yep, Jake, hope is not a strategy. I love that. On that note, because you speak of Dabo Swinney, you speak of Coach Beamer and a lot of other coaches around the country.
I like Dabo. I like Dabo, Chris.
Right, for sure. Trust me, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth and make you say something that you regret.
Oh, no, you're good. It's fine.
Yeah, confirmed. Jake Crane hates Dabo Swinney. On that note, though, I want to ask you because, you know, one of the things we also heard about Shane Beamer, you hear about coaches now, is he's a CEO type. And that's sort of the – I feel like there's a shift what we're moving to is coaches being sort of that fun, laid-back CEO type, like you said, delegating, letting their coordinators do everything and kind of handle everything instead of being the – maybe the Will Muschamp type of coach or the hard-nosed type of football coach.
Yeah.
Do you feel like at some point, because again, you've coached before, so I'm really curious to get your insight on this. Do you feel like there was a shift, like when that started happening of going to, because I feel like people, again, and as much as I hate to say it, people look at the Clemson model and the Dabo Swinney model and how he was a guy just like Shane Beamer, was never a coordinator. Was just an assistant, never a head coach, but he went out and hired great assistants, lets them work for him, and he handles building the culture, recruiting, you know, media, dealing with boosters, all those other things like you talked about that people don't really think about that a head coach has to handle. But do you feel like there was a shift in regards to, you know, going from the old school type of model to this new school, I guess, CEO type of head football coach?
Well, it's a great question. I actually asked him that because I love asking first-time head coaches, especially right when they get the job, you know, what type of head coach are you? And I thought his answer, and if, you know, your audience wants to go check it out, it was a great answer. He kind of said he was still feeling himself out a little bit. And then this was during spring. And it's funny just because where you are during practice as a coach, when it changes, it's so weird. And he talks about it, you know, typically at practice, you know, in my roles, I was with a certain group the whole time. And that's just how it worked. Well, now as the head coach, you know, I can't be here too much. I can't be there too much. Actually getting to walk around and see everything, it's different. But Chris, to your question, I think there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I'll give you an example. You have, you know, the Nick Saban hands-on approach. You know, it's going to be my strategy, really. And, you know, he made a big leap letting offensive guys start.
I feel like, not to cut you off, Jake. I feel like Saban is like the last of a dying breed. And I think that's one of the reasons why you sort of saw a lull in coaching prowess in the SEC over the last couple of years. Like from 2010 to 2020, there was just this thought process of, like I said, oh, you worked under Nick Saban, we're going to hire you. And it just turned out a lot of these guys, they were not fit for that role. Yeah. They were not the best available options. It really felt like the good old boy system. Yeah. I mean, hey, all due respect. Hey, this might piss off some of your listeners. I don't know if they'll tune into it, but Kirby Smart, all due respect to what he's done at the University of Georgia. I look at Kirby Smart. He's Will Muschamp with a better roster. He would have had the exact same fate in Columbia because they're all wired that way. They're all these defensive guys that, for whatever reason, it seems like cannot get out of their own way. Yeah. And like that's why I was so happy, again, speaking on Shane Beamer, I was so happy to see South Carolina step outside of that thought process and just think for once outside of the box and go get a guy and roll the dice and just take a chance. Continue. Well,
No. It's a great point. But to me, and even Nick Saban, and here's to me where the Nick Saban genius kicks in. And you're exactly right. And Kirby's figuring this out now and finally he's got a quarterback I think he trusts, is that the days of winning 9-6 and 20-3 and holding opponents to 10 points a game, that's gone. You have to score.
What was it? I think it was the 2011 Bama defense that like held opponents to 12 points per game.
It was ridiculous.
Like
when you look at it, he decided, listen, I've got to start spreading out the offense a little bit, trusting the offensive guys. Cause it used to be listen, we're going to play defense. We're going to run the ball and not turn it over. We're going to win the field position battle on special teams. And we're going to beat you 24-7 or 24-10. Cause that's what wins. Well, now you've got to score points to win. And coaches, and this is Gus Malzahn's fate to me. He never evolved offensively. He kept running the same stuff. When the game was changing and people figured it out, you know, it's great to have a great year or a couple great years, but the game always evolves. 40 years from now, everybody will be running the triple option again. That's just how it is. But when I look at Kirby Smart, his biggest problem, because it's not lack of talent. They got as much talent as anybody over there, and they recruit as well as anybody. And that's one of his biggest strengths. And he's got the blueprint from Saban. But Kirby offensively really kind of suppressed the offense, and it cost him. It really costs them, especially in the big games. You know, they make it a national championship game, but you don't win. And at the end of the day, Georgia fans are expecting a championship. And Kirby's kind of getting past that corner, I think, with Todd Monken and JT Daniels. But I go back and you talk about a CEO-type head coach. One of the first guys, really, in my opinion, to do it was Tommy Tuberville at Auburn to have success. He wasn't in there drawing up inside zone, stuff like that. He'd hire his coaches. He'd trust them. He was the CEO. He would handle the discipline with Coach Yawks. And when you have – because society and recruiting is a moving target. It's changing. And now with this NIL stuff, it's going to change even more. And if you have a guy that will not hire his friends because they're his friends and hire guys that he trusts and let him coach, that does a couple things. It empowers the coach, which empowers his mind. It increases creativity. It increases the trust between the coaching staff and the camaraderie. But it shows the players that the man in charge trust the guy that's telling them what to do. And when you have that, that is worth its weight in gold. And you've got everybody pushing in one organism. And it's not bad to segment it at all to say, listen, I'm a CEO head coach. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think Shane's going to be a mix of that. I think what you're going to get is a hybrid of this new coaching kind of tree that you're seeing coming out. You still have guys that'll be CEOs. You'll have a couple that are the hands on everything, stubborn, whatever you want to call it. But I think you're getting guys that are kind of hybrids, and those are going to be the most dangerous at the end of the day. Because just like a quarterback that can run and pass, Chris, a coach that knows the X's and O's, lets his coaches coach, can build the culture and recruit, that's a dual threat, gives you a chance to win more games in different ways.
Now, Jake, you talk about letting your coaches coach. Let's talk about the coaches that Shane Beamer hired. Offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield, defensive coordinator Clayton White. Of course, Satterfield, a guy that really has never had that high-profile job, was with the Panthers, pulling some things from Joe Brady. And then you have the influence of Shane Beamer, what they did at Oklahoma. You've got Luke Doty, who's most likely and is right now going to be QB1, who is a dual-threat guy. So Gamecock fans, of course, our minds, our imaginations are going crazy of, hey, is it going to be a spread? What's this offense going to look like? I think you saw in the spring game with the utilization of Jaheim Bell at the running back position, tight end, wide receiver, kind of one of those hybrid guys, like the H-back guys you'd see so often in Oklahoma. And then defensively, Clayton White bringing the 4-2-5 back to Columbia, which, of course, at least for me, defensively, the defense is the question for this team, especially a secondary that you're going to have to retool and rebuild. With the 4-2-5, it allows your guys to be athletic in South Carolina, certainly athletic and very talented on the defensive front. But when you look at these two guys, again, because I think one of the things – I know one of the things that Gamecock fans were sold on when Shane Beamer got the job was he's going to go out and hire elite-level assistants. And I know some fans were kind of left clamoring for more, to be totally honest with you, when those two guys were hired. Because, again, both of those guys – they're not exactly, you know, well-known commodities, if you will. Both quality coaches, don't get me wrong. And I graded them. I graded the coaching staff as a B in regards to it's a nice mix of you've got guys that, you know, don't have experience but are very talented. And you have guys that do have NFL experience and a lot of coaching experience. And it's a bunch of guys who want to be at South Carolina and are hungry and are chomping at the bit and have that chip on their shoulder and want to prove. And Shane Beamer, you know, I talked with guys within the program. They said Shane Beamer knew, hey, We'll take a lower salary. Our assistants will, because we know if we win, we're going to get paid. You know what 100%. I mean? The bottom line, you win, you will get paid. But talk about Satterfield, Clayton White, offensively, defensively, what you know about those guys. And if you had to predict right now, I guess, just what you are expecting from South Carolina on the offensive and defensive side of the football.
Yeah, I'll start on the offensive side. Here's my thing. The head coach is going to hire guys that he feels like fits. Because we talk about the culture with the players, there's a culture in the coaching staff too, and everybody wants the high profile hire. And
one,
I understand
one of
that
the best thing, one of the best things, just to, and just interject, Jake. One of the best things I ever heard was, I don't know if it was Kirby Smart or it was some other coach, whatever. But I feel like this would resonate with you since you were a coach. Basically, it said, long story short, coaches don't just coach players; they coach coaches. And I'd never thought of it. Right. I'd never thought of it that way, but I think that's so interesting.
Well, you have to. You have to coach the coaches. And coaches want to be coached because a lot of coaches want to be head coaches. There's some that don't, but most do. But sometimes when you make that high-profile hire, that's when egos clash. That's when you get, oh, all of a sudden, I want to do something a little bit different than you've been doing, and now it's a problem, and we're not meshing well when it's not looking good early, which offensively it never looks good early. That's the way it is. But I don't have any problem with the hires. As long as they're comfortable, the players enjoy it, the scheme is relevant and sound, then you give yourself a chance. But here's where I think, because it's fun to say, okay, what are we going to do offensively? Are we going to be a spread? Are we going to be smash mouth pro style, whatever? I think Shane Beamer's smart enough to adjust to his personnel, because it's not like he's had three recruiting classes. You can't go in here and say, all right, I'm going to fit a square peg into a round hole, because you don't have the players to do it. When I look at South Carolina, I look at four offensive line starters returning. That's huge. Now, they got to play better. They got to play a whole heck of a lot better than they did last year, but that's huge. You look at Kevin Harris coming back, Bell, Marshawn Lloyd coming off an injury, a dual threat quarterback. You lose Shai Smith, and there's some unproven wide receivers. We know Nick Muse is good. I know there's been transfers and stuff like that. Outside of Muse, there's not a whole lot of proven talent outside. So it lends me to believe that you're going to see a zone and gap scheme run team. I think you're going to see some 10 personnel. I think it's going to be a lot of play action. I think you're going to see zone read and RPO. So I think you're going to get a little bit of everything, but I think they're going to lean on the run game early. I think they're going to utilize, because the defense has to account for the quarterback running. That's the hardest thing. And what that does, it slows down the pass rush when you're RPO game, and that's tough. It puts the nickel in a tough position if you're going against a 4-2-5, which is what you're going to see a lot nowadays, especially in 10 personnel with the way they spread out. So I think Shane is going to adjust to his personnel, and he's going to use what spring taught him. He's going to use the guys that are doing right in the summer and then fall camp to say, listen, we're going to be a run to pass offense. I think that's what you're going to get early. We're going to have a good screen game, because I don't think they can just get in 10 personnel and empty and throw it all around the yard and be the globetrotters of football on offense and have success with it. They don't have the personnel there. I think they're going to build it from the inside out with what they have returning, which is smart. You said it. Luke Doty can run. Is he the greatest passer in the world? No, but he throws good enough. He's big and he's a threat. So you have to utilize your personnel's weapons. Now, 3 years from now, 3 years down the road, when he has his personnel in here, and that's why the portal is so great. If you're a new head coach, it's tough, but it could be great as well. I think you're going to see really what they wanted from the start to start taking fruition, which I think is still going to be an RPO spread game, but I think it's going to look similar to Oklahoma. I think he was really big on Lincoln, and I'm very interested to see the communication, because that's what separates Lincoln offensively. He can signal this to the offense, and it means nine different things. So when you're able to do that, you can't steal signals. There's so much more that goes into it other than we're a spread offense or we're a smash mouth or pro-style offense. So I think he's going to adjust to his personnel, and I like the hires. They're either going to mesh and it's going to work or they're not. And there's no perfect formula to hiring guys, whether they're high profile, low profile. There's been low profile guys that were awesome as coordinators. There's been high profile guys that sucked as coordinators. So it's really about the head coach, because it all falls on him. Now, defensively, I coached the 4-2-5 most of my career, even as a defensive coordinator. That's what we ran. I think in today's world, against the offenses that you see, it's the best base defense. But make no mistake, defense has changed. With the offense and pace and substitutions and packages, defense is reactionary. You don't make your call or send your personnel out there until you know their personnel, because it gives you a good idea of the formation and you have your checks to trips and stuff like that. So while it's going to be a 4-2-5, I expect Clayton to package it like normal. I'm interested to see how much pressure they're going to bring because they had to retool the back end, because there's two ways of thinking. Do we trust ourselves up front on the defensive line, which you return some quality there at the pass rusher? I love the Georgia State transfer. His name's eluding me right now.
Jordan Strong.
He had 10.5 sacks last year. I think his game translates to the SEC. I think he's going to be really good on third down. But do you have the depth there to say, listen, we're going to play coverage. We're going to try and get there with 4-5 sometimes and let our guys cover. Are we going to play off a little bit? Are we going to play 1 or we're going to play 0? And we don't trust our secondary, so we're going to heat you up. But on the other hand, if you sit there and heat them up, that's a lot of one-on-one coverages, and you better get there. And in today's game, which is with the ability of teams to have such an intuitive screen game, it's very tough to sit there and bring pressure the whole time. So you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. I think you're going to see a decent amount of base from South Carolina. I think you'll see a decent amount of boundary pressures, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of bringing the house and a lot of stuff like that. They're going to package it. They're going to play smart. You're going to get some zone. I'm interested to see how they play third down, Chris, and long. Third and 6 and up. That's how I'm interested to see how they play it. Speaking about coverage or pressure and how much they mix up coverage, because I know Clayton does a really good job as a combo coverage guy, and he's not afraid to go man a ton. But again, he's got to adjust his personnel as well.
Jake, let's talk about this 2021 Gamecocks squad on the field. We'll go back to the offense. Quarterback Luke Doty. Of course, if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. And yep. South Carolina's trying to find that now with Luke Doty. Came into the end of the season, the last three games. I thought he played fine. I mean, it's really hard to judge anybody off anything from the end of that last season last year, but I thought he did well. Again, we obviously know the athleticism, his athletic abilities. And like you said, maybe not the best passer. Of course, Jake, you know, SEC fans, they don't draw unreasonable conclusions from spring games, right? Certainly they don't do that.
They're the smartest. Well, they're the most informed fans around.
Right. Well, of course, the Gamecocks spring game goes down. Jason Brown, who's one of those transfers, you mentioned the quarterback, prospect from St. Francis, who also came in with EJ Jenkins, looked really, really good spinning the football. And of course, that gets the quarterback conversation going, followed by Shane Beamer immediately after the game naming Luke Doty QB1, which was no surprise to me. And I think he will be QB1 when the Gamecocks spot the ball September the 4th against Eastern Illinois. Talk about Luke Doty's game a little bit, though. It's very limited film. I know he's had limited action. Mm-hmm. What have you seen from him, though? And I agree with you that when people talk about the quarterback conversation, again, it's always the most highly debated position because the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on
100%.
Campus. We all know that. But when you talk about personnel and what this team features this year, the running game, the 4 offensive linemen returning, and we all know, call it for what it is, the wide receiver room is a major weakness. Yes, I feel good that maybe a guy like Amarian Brown, the Georgia Tech wide receiver, could be a big-time playmaker for you and a threat that could, if nothing else, stretch the field. There's some guys in there. You know, I said this a couple weeks ago. You got a bunch of guys in there. Who's going to be a dude? Who's going to step up and be a dude for you? But this is a team, I fully believe, Jake, that's going to be at minimum 65-35, probably 70-30 running the football. I would be willing to bet and make this bet right now with you, Jake, and I'm going to go into the season with this bet. In games that South Carolina throws the ball 30 times or more, they'll lose every one of them. I guarantee you that right now. But talk about Luke Doty's game and how you think it fits into this Carolina offense going into Shane Beamer's first year.
Yeah, well, I obviously you got to start with the size. I mean, he's an intimidating guy, you know, that's built really well. You turn on the film and you notice the size. That does have an effect. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be a great player because you're big or bigger than normal. But especially when you're able to run, because I always look at it from the defensive side. How would I try and combat what he does? Well, when you face a guy like that, and you say, listen, this guy is not an elite thrower, but he's got the arm strength to make the throws to the field. He can stretch the defense. He doesn't have a terrible deep ball. He's got some touch, which is the difference, in my opinion, between a guy like him and a guy, you know, and I love Kellen Mond. I'm not saying he's going to be better than Kellen Mond, but Kellen Mond struggled to throw the changeup. I think Doty can throw the changeup a little bit better than that. But the RPO game, that's going to be big, in my opinion, because it slows everything down on defense. You're able to hit different windows. And now the RPO game is so sophisticated. You can have your inside RPO game, your outside RPO game, almost a triple option type RPO game with your zone read and your Q power, but you always have to account for them. So you always feel like you're one down on defense and you're just worried about, you know, we can have everybody covered on third and seven and we're in man and have our backs turned. And here comes this huge guy rumbling for 10 yards. Now they got a first down, keeps the drive going. That's a killer on defense. So I think if I'm looking at it, from my perspective, what Luke Doty can bring, I think he can bring that smash mouth style. I think he can make you unbalanced on defense. He can catch you out of position. They're going to make him throw to beat him, in my opinion. If I'm facing Luke Doty, I'm loading the box, especially if you get an 11 or 12 personnel. I'm walking the safeties down, and you're going to have to prove to me that you can fit balls in windows, not only with pressure, but from the pocket. Can Luke Doty beat you passing from the pocket? I think the jury's still out on that. If he does, he's going to be a big problem. But I think Shane Beamer and them realize that. And let me say this. I'm not saying he is a horrible passer or it's going to be right. Some Kentucky style stuff.
He's not an elite level passer.
He's not an elite level. He's not, yeah. JT Daniels. Right. He's not, you know, he's not going to make
that. That's not breaking news. But
he doesn't have to be.
Right.
And Shane Beamer's smart to see it. So I think he can be effective. But I agree with you. If they sit there and rely on the passing game, that's a big risk, and you better be right, especially early, because if I'm South Carolina, I'm trying to stay in this game in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Give me a chance in the fourth quarter, and let's see if we can win it, see if we can't grind these guys down a little bit. And, I mean, again, when you have a guy like Luke Doty, third and one becomes a whole lot easier because the quarterback can run. So I think there's a lot of pros. There's some cons, and he's going to have to throw. He's going to have to complete 55 to 60% of his passes, in my opinion. And I know that's not a very high, you know, super duper high number, but if he can do that mixed with a good run game, I think they can be somewhat balanced on offense. And at the end of the day, that's what it takes.
You know, what's crazy, Jake, is that last year teams stacked the box as well. Kevin Harris didn't care. And I want to talk about
that really
running
game
back. Because yes, Kevin Harris, nobody saw that coming last year. It's like, who the heck is this guy? The best running back you'd never heard of. You know, when Marshawn Lloyd went down in the preseason, I thought that was pretty much it for the South Carolina offense. I was like, okay, we're going to average 20 points per game. Colin Hill's a statue, you know, and God bless Colin Hill. I got nothing against the kid, but you know, there were definitely limitations there. And you just thought to yourself, my goodness, we just lost our home run threat. Everyone was counting on Marshawn Lloyd to be the focal point of the South Carolina offense, including yours truly. Kevin Harris, what he did last year, he now enters this 2021 season as, I would say, one of the best two or three running backs in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Some would argue he is the best returning running back in the SEC. And then you factor in a guy like Marshawn Lloyd that, Jake, I really believe, you know, he's still rehabbing right now and should be 100% good to go at latest by fall camp, I would say, certainly kickoff. But if Marshawn Lloyd is the guy we all heard about on the recruiting trail, the scary part, Jake, I think he's going to be better than Kevin Harris is. And when you talk about that 1-2 punch, I would love to hear, how good do you think that 1-2 punch for South Carolina could be? Where do you think it ranks amongst the SEC's best running back duos?
Well, you know, it's funny, Chris. Last year before the season, I was all on the Marshawn Lloyd hype train for South Carolina. I thought he was going to be the break. I thought he had a chance to be newcomer of the year in the league because they were going to lean on him. You best believe, Will Muschamp, they were going to lean on him. But, you know, sometimes it's crazy. You have somebody like that go down. Now you stacked your room even more. Kevin Harris is as confident as anybody, and they're two different backs. You don't win these games with just rolling the same type guy out there. Now you can go 20 personnel, two backs, and have two totally different guys. You can run one on the swing, run the read underneath, and really have a problem. And it really helps you on third down as well, because the back, the check down, is a very deadly play if you know how to use it right. But Marshawn Lloyd, we know he's a home run hitter. And nowadays, with the medical advancements, as strong as some of these young guys are in the strength and conditioning program, I'm sure he'll be back and fine. But he's got to take it from Kevin Harris. You know, Kevin Harris earned those guys in that locker room. They saw those runs. They saw him. That dude's a load, and he can move. He moves a whole lot better at that size than what I thought. But now if you're Shane Beamer, last year, I know he wasn't there, but you lost one last year, but you almost gained one. And I think if you look at that duo, and it does nothing but help a guy like Luke Doty in the run game, because now you have to worry about Marshawn Lloyd, you have to worry about Kevin Harris, and you have to worry about Luke Doty. And that's a problem, having to defend all those things and keeping your eyes in the right spot. I think that they, if Lloyd is, like you said, what we think he is, or what he was built up to be, even coming off this injury, you're going to be hard pressed, you know, outside of Alabama, in my opinion. Georgia's really loaded with backs, but you're looking at 1-2. They're up there, man. I think Tank Bigsby is obviously one of the most talented in the country at Auburn. But if you're South Carolina, you got to feel great about the run game. And if you can marry that with four offensive line starters coming back and they play well and they're confident, you could really, you know, that's how Kentucky started having a lot of success. They built it from the inside out and relied on that. And I think you could see South Carolina not only stay in a few games you don't think they can stay in, but maybe win a couple that you don't think they can win. Because listen, if you can run the ball and you can stop the run, and you don't turn the ball over, you're always going to have a chance to win.
Yep. As much as football changes, one thing remains constant. You win the line of scrimmage, it's a pretty damn good chance you're going to win the football game.
You're damn right.
And speaking, Jake, of the line of scrimmage, let's talk on the defensive side of the football, because that's going to be the strength of this Carolina football team. You start talking about guys like J.J. Nkbare, Jordan Strawn, Jordan Birch, Zach Pickens, Tonka Hemingway, Rick Sandage, other guys that are probably slipping my mind right now. Debo Williams, the transfer, comes in. He's probably going to take over that role that Ernest Jones had. Sherrod Green, Mo Kaba. The front seven for South Carolina, no doubt, is going to be the strength and what they lean on, because, like I said, Jake, the secondary, a retooled secondary. I'm not sure if you knew this. Cam Smith is your leading returning defensive back, most tenured defensive back. He has 3 career starts. So it is a very much green defensive back room. Like you said, I'm really interested, too, to see what does South going to do. They sort of sell out with pressure or say, okay, our 4 are good enough to get there. When you look at the Gamecocks defensive line, defensive front specifically, though, guys you like, what do you see? I'm really high on this group. Again, Enigbari, I think, is going to have a monster year, and I think we're finally going to see guys like Birch and Pickens hit their potential. 2 guys that were 5-star prospects, big-time prospects that literally everybody in this conference wanted. What do you see from that group of guys specifically?
Well, you know, it's funny. We keep talking about the strengths. And if I'm a South Carolina fan, you know, something that I'm excited about is the strength really on offense and defense really looks up front to me with what they have returning and experience. I know they lost a little to the NFL, but if you're going to be good anywhere, you want to be good up front, because that solves a lot of problems in the back end. Because again, you don't want to have to sell out. You want to just get there with 4. You cannot find a defensive coach in the world that would not rather be able to rush the passer with success with 4 guys and say, no, we're just going to bring everybody all the time, whatever. Because again, the more plays you have to go down the field, the less chance you have of scoring. It's just math. It is what it is. But when you're running a 4-2-5, the two backers in the middle have to be really good. But to me, without a doubt, outside of being good up front, the position that you have to have a dude at in the 4-2-5 is the nickel, because you've got to be able to do multiple things. That guy's got to be able to help against the run. He's got to be able to, even if you're a zone team, he's got to be able to get hands on guys going to the next level. He's got to be able to push to number one on the hitch. He's got, if you go man, he's got to be able to cover the slot or play man on man. And it's hard to find dual threat guys like that. And if you're able to have a guy in that spot, it takes a ton of pressure off of you from a play calling standpoint, because the menu is open. It's like having a tight end. The nickel is a direct reflection defensively of having a tight end that can block and run routes and catch the ball. If you have a nickel that can do that, you really nullify a lot of matchups. And size sometimes with these tight ends give them matchups, and I understand that. But it's so important to have a guy that can do both. And if you can solve that question, it really marries. It's the connector of the secondary and the defensive line. But I think you will see South Carolina be one of the better teams defensively up front on the defensive line. And all they need is a little momentum. That's because they have talent. You went down the list. Like I said, I love the Georgia State transfer, Straw. I really think that South Carolina at the end of the day can lean on that front seven, especially early in the season. Because listen, it's not going to be gorgeous on offense early in the season. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody that. The defense is going to have to hold up their end of the bargain, maybe a little bit more early. But I think they have some personnel in the front seven to do that. The question is, if for some reason they're not dominant in the pass rush, does the defensive backfield have enough talent and ability to be able to not give up the huge play? Because that's what hurts South Carolina, giving up the huge play. There's nothing wrong sometimes with giving up 15-yard runs or 25-yard passes. But when those inside zones go for 70 and that screen goes for 80 and they're getting jump balls left and right from the 40 in, that's when you start looking up at the scoreboard going, oh no, here we go again. So I think those are the things you have to look at. Can you get there with four? Are we solidified at nickel? And those are the questions going in, and I think there's a good chance they will be.
Yeah, for sure. Jake, of course, it's talking season right now. We're getting closer and closer to kickoff. I want to get your thoughts on this 2021 season specifically. We'll start specifically Gamecocks, and I'd love to hear just your overall analysis of the SEC and kind of conference winner stuff like that. But for South Carolina, because the question shifts to, and the question I get all the time, you know, what are the first-year expectations? What are reasonable first-year expectations? I think South Carolina's not the only team that feels this way, but, man, I know a lot of SEC fan bases are so glad to see the non-conference return because last year you couldn't hide from it. Hey, if you had deficiencies, you were going to get beat up. Your record was going to be ugly. It was going to reflect that. Now, hey, you know what's perfect for a first-year head coach? Opening up with Eastern Illinois, going to East Carolina week two, which I think could be a tricky game, but having those, like you said, the offense is going to have to figure itself out early on. The defense, this entire team is going to have to kind of build things and kind of figure things out as they go. Having those non-conference games. And if you look at this South kind of schedule, Jake, I mean, just the front half, Eastern Illinois at ECU, of course, at Georgia, tough one, but then Kentucky at home, Troy at home, at Tennessee, Vandy at home. I mean, you're looking realistically, this could be a team that starts 5-2. Some people even said 6-1, and I am cautious to be that bold because I still have to remind myself, you know, call it what it is. This is a program that's won six games the combined last two seasons. But I think getting to 6-6, Jake, I think getting to a bowl game in year one is a reasonable expectation and is a reasonable goal. And if you can do that, if you can get to a bowl game in year one, I think that is a success in Shane Beamer's first season. When you look at this schedule, you look at this team, brand new coaching staff, hey, brand new quarterback, what are your first-year expectations for South Carolina or Shane Beamer? What do you think would spell a successful first year for him?
Yeah, well, I think making a bowl game is very doable because you got to look at the landscape to me. This isn't just about South Carolina. Outside of Georgia, because I think Florida's going to take a step back a little bit, what they've lost, the East is wide open. I mean, it really is wide open a little bit. I actually have Kentucky finishing second and Missouri finishing third. I got Florida finishing fourth. That's what I kind of think. And listen, I think Emory Jones is a pretty good player, but I think Dan Mullen's trying to get out of there. But you know you're not going to finish last because Vanderbilt's in the SEC and they're in your division. Tennessee is an absolute disaster right now. They had more people leave Tennessee this offseason than they did Egypt, you know, 500 million years ago, whatever that was. And then you look, you know, South Carolina, while you have some deficiencies, you've got a decently easy schedule early to get some momentum to start saying, hey, guys, listen, all the stuff I told you in the offseason about doing stuff right, look, it's working. It's working. Guys start going, hey, man, like this, like Coach Beamer, like this is working. But like we can really do it. Now going to Georgia is going to be a tough one. Obviously, I got them. I think they got a good chance to win the national championship. But I don't see any reason why South Carolina can't go to a bowl game this year. And if you were going to get into the East at any point in time, as dominant as Georgia is, right now the getting's good. That somebody there looking, and listen, I know Florida won the East last year and you know played Bama pretty well, but with as much as they lost, I think South Carolina's got a chance to get a few surprise wins, get the ball rolling early, get some momentum, and kind of see where it lays. But I don't think a bowl is out of the question by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. That second half of the season, just to, in case you don't have it pulled up, at Texas A&M, bye week, Florida, which, speaking of that Florida game, they catch Florida at a really, really interesting time. You've got that one at home. You're coming off a bye week, and Florida will be coming off of the Georgia game. So you never know. Following that, though,
And they've already played right. Bama. Which exactly. You don't just recover from those the next week. Right. I mean, that's where the trainers really make their money.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more people in the hot tub than at the Playboy Mansion, man.
For sure. So you got that game against the Gators, though, then at Mizzou, Auburn at home, Clemson home. So certainly the second half of the schedule toughens up. But, Jake, and again, you speak from the coaching side of things, which, again, I think is such a unique perspective. Because I'll tell you this, making a bowl game, obviously the goal, what we all want to see in year one. For me, almost, Jake, year one of Shane Beamer, the record is almost kind of secondary for me. And I do agree it's important, though, to win games in year one, because like you said, you know, as a former coach, and I know as someone that was a college athlete, when you win, it says to your players, your organization, hey, we're not just blowing smoke up your ass. Like, what we're saying is the right messaging. That's how you build the culture and lay the foundation. Mm-hmm. But what I want to see in year one of Shane Beamer is kind of aside from the record. I really just simply want to see, like you said, the beginning of truly building that culture, that foundation, a disciplined football team, a team that plays the game the right way, doesn't shoot itself in the foot. Hey, just shows up and is excited to play on Saturday, because believe it or not, that's something that we feel like was lacking with the last regime at times. When it comes to on the field, are there things specifically outside of record that you think South Carolina fans should be looking for? And maybe you can point to and say, hey, that's how you know things are turning the right direction.
Yes. Number one, off the field stuff. You see how guys are handling themselves off the field. Are guys going out and getting arrested? Or are they doing stupid things? Do you have guys that are academically ineligible? Those are things to watch for, because that goes into culture. Because whatever happens off the field, it translates on the field. And you know this from playing way more than what people on the outside think. It is amazing. Because we're talking about human beings. I think we forget that sometimes. We're talking about human beings. Second thing, body language during the game. If something goes bad, how are the players reacting? If something goes good, how are the players reacting? How does the sideline look? How are the players interacting with the coaches when they just went 3-and-out and going off the field? That's something I pointed out last year at South Carolina. Bo Nix and Chad Morris are screaming at each other, running off to the sideline. It can't happen. Yeah. That shows you that something's wrong within the coaching staff and within the culture. I'm watching that. How do the guys play? Are guys finishing? Are offensive linemen chasing the run when they break a big one, getting ready to get set? Are defensive guys laying the hat, getting up and headbutting each other and excited to go out there and whip somebody's ass? You know, those are the things that you look at as a team. And listen, Shane Beamer said this. He told his guys, and I think it's great, I'm not here year one not to win any games. Like, we're trying to win games. Now, we have to put the culture in the right way. We have to do things the right way down the road to win even bigger games. But I'm not selling out this season by any stretch of the imagination. And that's what you want. Is it super realistic? No. But that's the mindset you want. You can't go in there and look those guys in the eyes and say, listen, guys, we're just going to try really hard. You guys just try really hard. And if we win or lose, it's okay. You know, the grind, you do all that stuff, the film, the hitting in practice, the drills, the rolling on the mat, the run until you throw up, wanting to quit. You do that to win. You don't do that to hope to win or try to win. Now, does that mean you're going to win? Not necessarily all the time. It comes down to personnel. But those are some things that I would look for. How is the kicking game? How are the small things? Are guys getting – is there a bunch of illegal procedure penalties? Are guys lining up wrong on defense? Because if it looks funny, it is funny. I'll go ahead and tell you from the coach's standpoint. So outside of the wins and losses, those are the things that I would be looking for as indicators down the road how this program's going to operate.
Now, Jake, the total SEC landscape, before we get you out of here, I'd just love to get your thoughts on this. I mean, you look at the East and the West and the SEC champion. I mean, is it as simple as just Georgia, Alabama yet again, and Alabama is your SEC champion? I mean, again, I feel like it's Alabama's world, and we're all living in it. And Bama, the rich get richer. We saw with, Henry Toto that's going from Tennessee to Alabama. They get, like I said, the rich get richer. But is it just as simple as Georgia, Alabama, Bama, SEC champion? Or do you see maybe a Texas A&M, or maybe, who knows, maybe a Florida's got somehow, maybe Emory Jones turns into the right guy. Do you see anyone disrupting that order?
Yeah, well, Georgia's going to win the East. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody. Yep. Georgia's going to win the East. They're just
shocking.
Shocker. They're just physically, they're physically
you
different.
You sure you don't want to be that guy?
No,
that
goes I'm beaten path. Yeah, but. No, I'm good. I'll take Vandy plus 10,000. Yeah. Georgia's going to win the East. They're just physically, they've got more depth. They just have more talented players. But, you know, from the West, I'm not betting against Saban, man. I mean, you know, you have guys every year. Alabama lost this, you know, whatever, whatever. Look, the way they've recruited, I mean, they just had the best offensive line class in the history of the world. I think they're going to lose an SEC game this year. I don't think they're going undefeated, but I think Alabama wins the West. The way I have it, and I put this out on social media, you can follow us at the J-Boy Show on Instagram and Twitter. I put it out, the East, I got Georgia, Kentucky, Missouri, Florida, South Carolina, then Tennessee, then Vanderbilt. In the West, I've got Bama, LSU, A&M, Auburn, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Mississippi State. I don't think I left anybody out. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to have A&M and LSU both finish with 5-3 records. I got LSU winning that game. I think they play A&M at home the last game. But no, I can't bet against Alabama and Georgia. I mean, they're too far ahead. That's one of the reasons why I think we should go to an 18 playoff. I know we'll discuss that another time. But no, I've got those two penciled in, but I do think Alabama loses an SEC game this year.
Bold. Bama losing an SEC. Probably national champions, though. What do you think? It's Bama Clemson again? Is it just
Georgia.
Just that easy?
I got Georgia.
Yeah. I think that they might have finally found their quarterback in JT Daniels.
Well, I think Kirby trusts him enough to let Munkin like actually take shots on first down and operate a normal passing offense, not just like, all right, guys, we're gonna run it until we don't have to run it anymore. And here's a play action. Here it is. Where's George Pickens? Oh, wait.
Every year's been the year since 1980. Last thing, Jake, before I get you out of, because you bring up something interesting in your predictions, and I've seen it from others. I think it was Josh Pate at 247 Sports, who we're actually having on the show later this week, that also was saying about Kentucky, his most underrated team or a team he feels really good about. That makes Gamecock fans cringe. And when you're talking, you're looking at the schedule, you're talking about the biggest game of the 2021 season for South Carolina, or the most important game, I should say. That Kentucky game, in my opinion, is one that stands out. Week 4, following Georgia, you beat Kentucky. All of a sudden, you start the year 3-1 with Troy the following week. You're 4-1. Where would you rank that? I mean, again, I know you probably don't have the entire schedule pulled up, but I at first thought maybe at East Carolina, week 2 was the most important game. And is that maybe insulting? I don't know, but I think that's the point that you are at the program right now. That's a game you absolutely have to win. But I do understand where fans come from, Jake, in the sense of, and maybe this is the wrong way to think about it, but that Kentucky game at home, I think for a lot of fans, that is going to be the difference between, oh my God, here we go again, versus, okay, this really is the beginning of a new era. Because if you ask any Gamecock fan right now, Jake, any of them, and South Carolina's lost 6 of 7 to Kentucky, believe it or not, there's still not a single South Carolina fan right now that would tell you Kentucky's got a better football program than we do. But if you lose that one, you cannot justify, in my opinion, you're a realistic contender or even trending the way that you necessarily want to. And that's not to say if you lose to Kentucky, that which Kentucky's going to be a quality football team this year. Give credit to what Mark Stoops has built. But if you lose to Kentucky, man, just that, especially at home, especially when
Well, there's still that stigma too about Kentucky.
They're still,
you know what I'm saying? We all remember Kentucky being Vandy.
Escaped. Yeah, they have not.
Yeah, we remember Kentucky being Vandy. That's exactly. But Mark Stoops has done such a good job, and I you know, talking to NFL scouts, really, the first thing they say is he changed that program up front. That's where Kentucky, because again, and the reason I haven't finished this so high is they haven't had a passing game. You know, they've had this success without throwing the ball. They were a glorified wildcat, almost triple option team, even with Terry Wilson in that Eddie Grant system. So any passing game help that they get is going to be huge. You return Josh Ali. You return some guys on that roster, some offensive linemen. I think Bo Allen's going to be the quarterback. He's going to be an upgrade from what you've had there and being able to throw the ball and at least being a threat to the defense. Now, they can't load the box every time and say, listen, we're going to turn this into inside drill for 4 quarters and see if we can't win. And Kentucky's made their hay on defense. And that's what their identity is. And they're tough as hell under Mark Stoops. And I think that identity, especially in a year like this, and you look at the schedules and stuff like that, I think that's going to kind of push them toward making this move. Now, I don't think it's sustained success. I don't think you're going to see Kentucky become a top tier team in the East every year, but I think it lines up for them this year. But I think you're exactly right. you can't sit here and say, well, you know, our program is as good as Kentucky if you're not beating Kentucky's. Now, who would I buy right now for the next 5 years? Kentucky or South Carolina? I'm taking South Carolina. But for next year, I'm buying Kentucky.
Fair enough. Jake, I appreciate you tuning in. One more time, just let people know where they can find the J-Boy Show. Again, you do great work. Had the interview with Shane Beamer. Just plug it one more time where they can tune in.
Well, Chris, man, I appreciate it, brother. This has been fantastic. We got to do this again. I know me and you are going to talk, but you can find us on YouTube. We got a brand new channel. It's the J-Boy Show, T-H-E space, J-B-O-Y space, S-H-O-W. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere. We don't do interviews really over 30, 35 minutes. So if you want to listen to some ball on your commute to work with no politics, check us out. We've had Mike Leach, Bruce Pearl, Shane Beamer. We're getting Lane Kiffin. We've got everybody. If it's dealing with the SEC, we got you covered. Check us out. Also, the JBoyShow.com. We got some really cool merchandise as well. You can get you a Win the Water Cooler hoodie. We've got gray and black and some more cool stuff on there. But now, Chris, man, it's been an honor, and I really appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, we'll do it again soon. He's Jake Crane. I'm Chris Phillips. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on an episode of the Spurs Up Show.